everyone, and welcome back to the Your Biggest Fangirl podcast. I am one of your hosts, Victoria Malle.
And I am Kristen Chavez.
And today we have Monica Duarte with us.
Yep. Hi, guys.
Oh my God, we're so excited to have you on. Other than being one of our first ever followers, Monica Duarte is a writer and photographer and the social media director for the website Temple of Geek. Truly a professional fangirl. Apart from listening to her insights every week on the Temple of Geek podcast, you may find her at a convention taking photos of cosplayers, which can be found on Geek and Cosplay Report in addition to Temple of Geek. She's also the co-host of Con Madres, a YouTube channel where she and co-host Dee discuss everything from cosplay to Infinity War reactions to geeky crafts you can make with your kids. With all these geeky pursuits under her belt, we are thrilled to welcome Monica on the podcast for a discussion of Doctor Who and all the wonderful women that comprise the fandom.
And let us just note that Monica is also wearing an amazing 13th Doctor t-shirt today.
My honey got me this. It was like a surprise. It showed up one day and I was like, you really do love me. Like, you know me. I'm a huge Doctor Who fan. But like just the fact that it showed up and I was like... It was like right after her announcement, so I was very excited.
Oh my gosh, awesome.
As someone who goes to a lot of conventions and takes photos of different cosplayers, do you have any top tips for rocking your cosplay at a convention or how to rock your own cosplay photo shoot, which we have seen some of yours as well?
I would just say be confident, be excited. You put a lot of work into your cosplay. You know, don't worry about like who likes it, who doesn't. Like you can just see that when somebody's really nervous or like they've never posed for like a photographer before. Cause like for me, I like to take pictures of every cosplay, no matter like the quality of the cosplay. And like people get really excited about that, but they're also very nervous if they've never been like professionally photographed or anything like that. So just be confident, you know, shoulders back and you know, you'll be okay.
That's awesome. So you're also a mama.
I am.
Which is really cool because we have not entered that like time of our lives as fangirls yet. What has been your experience making fandom a family endeavor?
The way I got into podcasting and photographing and all that started as a family endeavor. My son, Ashton, who's 14 now, I took him when he was like maybe 4 years old to see Iron Man in theaters. And at that time, Iron Man was so obscure as a character. He wasn't like a big deal. But I was like, it's Marvel. We'll go check it out. And we saw it in theater on every single one of my days off because he was just like, like it's a super. And I loved the movie. I really enjoyed it. So it was always just me and him kind of like geeking out and like everything that I loved. Like I loved Batman and I loved Star Wars and I would make him sit there and watch it. We could have all these things together and all the toys that I bought him. Like I knew about all the characters. So I'd be like, oh, you need this guy and you need this guy, you know? So it was fun. And then when I met his stepdad, we met this other geeky person that just kind of fit into our mold really great. And the first time we walked into a convention, we already had another little one and he was in a stroller and we walked in and we're like, oh my gosh, this is where we belong. Like this is the place that had been missing all our lives. This is where all our people are. And we walked into it together as a family. And ever since, you know, Marvel Cinematic Universe with Robert Downey Jr., like we were in, it's always been a family thing for us.
That's so cool.
Are they the same with Doctor Who as well?
We all kind of started it at the same time. It was something that we kind of like, my brother was watching it. I thought it was really cheesy when I would walk by. I'm like, what are you guys watching? The special effects are terrible. And it was something once I sat down and watched one episode, my son and my boyfriend had already been watching it for like a season already. And I got hooked in and I was like, oh, you can't take me away from this. So before everything was about Doctor Who, we did the family cosplays together and we'd go to all the Gallifrey One and all the conventions. And I started hosting Doctor Who meetups at conventions and things like that. It was just, it consumed us. And now my oldest has kind of outgrown Doctor Who.
Okay.
And it's really heartbreaking. But when they announced that Jodie was going to be the 13th Doctor, he was like, girl, huh? He's like, I kind of want to see what happens. And so like now he's waiting for Jodie. But I think he just, since the time he was like maybe 7 or 8, has been like hardcore into Doctor Who. And I think now his interests are more like video games and things like that. So it's a little hard for us to see him like leave the fandom. But I think Jodie's going to bring him back.
Well, I think that's interesting too, because I've been a fangirl, you know, since birth. But there have been times where I've like cycled in and out of fandom. Yeah. So it's not always like a set thing. So I have hope that he'll return.
Yeah.
So do you have a favorite Doctor Who character that you like to cosplay or shoot?
I don't have any favorites because I love all of them. And even I like to shoot characters that I don't like only because I just love the fandom in general. But I think the one that I like to do the best is Osgood. I love Osgood. I think she is the ultimate fangirl and she's just so good. I mean, I could talk about Osgood all day, but I just think like Osgood is so good and so kind and so responsible. And like, I wish I could be that way. Like, I want to be more like her kind of things. Every time I see an Osgood cosplay, I like run after them. I'm like, wait, let me take your photo. And I don't care if it's like the cheesiest Osgood cosplay. I'm just excited that somebody else loves the character enough to dress up like them.
I love Osgood. She honestly needed to be like a full-time companion. I love her so much.
Yes. I'm glad that she's still like doing the, I guess, the unit audio series. Greta Oliver, like, you know, voices Osgood there too. So that's great. But I want to see her in the TARDIS flying away with the Doctor.
Come on, man. Full disclosure, I am not as into the Doctor Who fandom. I've obviously seen episodes and like through my friends who are all Doctor Who fans, like I know the major foundations.
It's a poster, you get it.
Yeah. Yeah. So for any fangirls who are listening who are maybe like me and new to Doctor Who or aren't as entrenched in the fandom, what are some of like the major things that you need to know?
So I guess it's been on for 55 years now.
Just a quick 55.
Just about.
I think it is the longest running sci-fi show. The way they keep the show running is that the Doctor, the main character, he's an alien from the planet Gallifrey. And when he dies, he doesn't actually die. He regenerates into a new character. It's the same person with the same memories. It's just a different casing. He's just different on the outside. You know, they've gone through 12 Doctors. They're going into the 13th Doctor, which for the first time will be regenerating into a woman. So that's really exciting. And that's mainly what you need to know. He flies around in a police box. It's a spaceship that travels in time and space.
Mm-hmm. And he usually sticks around Earth a lot of the time.
Yeah, and he has a human companion. He's always with some Earthling.
Taking on the universe.
Yeah.
Since you brought up the companions, we kind of want to examine the evolution of companionship over the show with you. The relationship with the companions change with each Doctor. Like, from the beginning, it was a familial relationship with the first Doctor and his granddaughter, Susan. And then it's a little more platonic, I feel, in the classic Who. But then by the time we get to the 10th Doctor and Rose, it's more romantic. And we see all those changes throughout the Doctor's time. And since most of the time those companions are female, I feel like that does bring up the question, is the role of the companion empowering to female characters when it's tied to a romantic lead? And how does that kind of change for the Doctor?
I'm going to use Martha Jones as an example for this one.
I love her.
I do too. And she was romantically interested in the Doctor, and I don't blame her. He's this, you know, fascinating, intelligent, and like, obviously on screen, David Tennant is really great looking, but I think even if he wasn't great looking, his knowledge and his heroism and everything about that character is extremely attractive. And so I understand her falling for that character, but also she was smart enough to realize, like, this isn't going to go anywhere. This isn't safe for me. I'm going to walk away on my own terms. I had my fun, but you know what? I'm walking away. And I think that's so empowering and so strong because she wasn't there, I guess, like Rose, just hanging on for hope and not really looking at the implications of what would happen if, like, you know, he's going to outlive you. He's not going to age the way you are going to age and things like that. And obviously Rose got her happy ending, but Martha was able to really look at that and just say, you know, I'm going to walk away. And I feel like that's really empowering. And I think every companion has that choice. I don't think they're ever just like stuck or not able to make their own decisions.
Because something we were talking about earlier, there have been so many great platonic doctor relationships, doctor companion relationships. I'm thinking of, I'm blanking on her character's name. Who was Catherine Tate?
Donna.
Because I think in these newer seasons, there has tended to be a romantic undercurrent, if not like having it out in the open. I'm curious if that undermines the relationship. Like, can the Doctor and the companion have a fruitful relationship if it's a man and a woman without there having to be some romantic sexual tension?
Absolutely. I think Catherine Tate is a perfect example of that. There doesn't always have to be that chemistry to have fun. And when you look back at like the earlier Doctors and their companions, there wasn't all that romance or anything, you know, especially like with the first Doctor, he's traveling with his granddaughter, Susan, and she's a wonderful companion. She leaves early on, but she's still a wonderful companion and they're related. And I think sometimes when you're really into somebody, you can be blinded by things. And I'll use Clara Oswald as an example, where she was just really really in love with the doctor. You could see it. She was so fascinated by him. And she probably put herself in situations that she shouldn't have. She let it affect her relationship with her partner, Danny Pink, and things like that. So I think sometimes it's nice to have a companion that you're not looking at romantically. It's not blind love. And you can be like, hey, like, you can't get away with that. I'm not going to let you get away with that. Like Donna Noble in like the Pompeii episode where like David Tennant wants to fly off and she's like, no, we're going to save somebody. I don't care who. And I think sometimes when you're blinded by somebody because they're so pretty or whatever, you're just like, okay, whatever you say, you know. And
infatuation does that.
Yeah. It's just a different dynamic.
I think the importance of that dynamic is to be that human element that challenges the doctor in those kinds of moments, to be like, no, like, you're looking at this as a Gallifreyan or Time Lord. And sometimes you do have to look at it from a human's point of view. We have a shorter lifespan than you. We come from Earth. This is how our lives are. And so I think that dynamic has always been important, and it does come up in each different type of companion, whether they're romantically interested in him or not. How do you think that that companionship relationship might change when it comes to the 13th Doctor, or will it change?
I'm hoping that it won't change. I mean, it's being the showrunner has written for Doctor Who before. He's written some great episodes before. So I think they know the feeling. They understand. They're fans themselves. So I'm hoping it's that same kind of formula that's always work, but with some really great writing and some great new scenes and new characters. I'm okay with it either way. I don't have a problem with the Doctor being romantic, but at the same time, like, I just want my show to carry on. So you're gonna have to go as a companion eventually. Don't get attached.
Yeah, I think that's a great point.
What do you think about the fact that she has multiple companions?
I love that. Yeah. I love big TARDIS teams. I was really excited of when Mickey joined the TARDIS with Rose and Captain Jack, and that's fun. And then when they had that big episode and you have like Elizabeth Sladen back, Sarah Jane, just that was so fun for me. And I loved when they shot to different scenes, like where you had like the Torchwood crew over here. And I'm all about the big TARDIS teams. I feel like they missed a huge opportunity with not letting Danny Pink onto the TARDIS. Like, he had one episode, but I would love to see a Clara, Danny, like kind of like Amy and Rory type thing. I love the big ones. I loved River with Amy and Rory and the Doctor. Like, I'm all about that.
I'm so excited. I just want a nice big ensemble.
So we wanted to talk a little more about the 13th Doctor with you. We found this really interesting article from purehistorical.com called The Future Has Regenerated, A History of Women in Doctor Who by Mandy Chu. And it kind of goes through what we've been discussing, the nature of the companions, and then what it means to have a female doctor, and also just the roles and the significance of females in sci-fi.
This was written like shortly after Jodie Whittaker was announced as the Doctor, because of course we're spoiled way early on that the Doctor will die at the end of X season and will regenerate. So spoilers, as Riversong would say. What were your first impressions of seeing the 13th Doctor in those about, what, 1 minute after Peter Capaldi regenerated?
Originally, because there was all kinds of rumors that it might be a woman and things like that. And I was kind of on the side of like, I like things how it is. I don't want it to change. I was skeptical. I didn't realize I needed a woman doctor until I saw her. And when I saw her, I was like, I didn't know that I needed this. Like, this is amazing. And when she takes the hood off and like, you know, I'm watching it with my family, and I don't know if it was my son or my boyfriend who whispered it, but he was like, it's a woman. I can tell by the hands. Like, and I just said, you know, when she pulls her hood off, I was like, oh my God, this is the Doctor. Like, I knew instantly. I ran to my closet to find whatever I could find that looked like Jodie's outfit, and I found it. I had it.
Naturally.
I met Stephen Moffat at San Diego Comic Con dressed as her. Like, I was just so excited. Oh, it was a highlight. I didn't realize that I needed that in my life. Like, I thought I would just always be, and I would have been always happy with like a male doctor. I never had a problem with that. But when I saw her, I was like, wow. And I wasn't expecting to feel that way.
So what does it mean to you to have a female doctor after all these years of male doctors? And not that the male doctors aren't wonderful, but now
they are. Totally. I don't know that it means anything more than excitement for the show, that it's maturing and it's growing and it's, you know, developing. We're talking about a show that's been on for 54 years. Right now, Twitch is streaming all the old classic Doctor Who episodes, which is really fun. But then you kind of see some and you're like, ooh, that's so taboo. That's like, mm-hmm. you know, so you can see it growing. I think it's a good representation of the times mm-hmm. that we live in. And I love to see like that the show's just not staying stale in the same formula over and over. I like that it's moving like we're moving, like as a generation, as a people, as a society, like the show is moving with the times. And I love that.
Absolutely.
Upon the announcement that Jodie was going to be the 13th Doctor, I felt like a little bit of like the pressure set in when you have your first female something in like a superhero or a first person of color in this type of really important, culturally impactful role, that it has to be great or else we can't let another female or person of color do something like this again.
I feel like as a female fan, you're always kind of defending yourself. You have to defend the fact that you're a fan and you have to know more than everybody, which is like mm-hmm. totally unfair. Like, I want to love a movie because I saw it one time in the theater and I should be able to just be excited and enthusiastic about it. But because women in this fandom, like I always feel like we have to like prove ourselves. Mm-hmm. And I don't care if Jodie's the worst. I'm just glad that there's a female doctor and that we're moving in that direction. And maybe the next female doctor will be better or whatever. But I just hate the mentality of like that we have to prove ourselves as geeks or as part of the fandom. I see this a lot in the Star Wars franchises. I'm at the point where like I don't need her to be amazing. I'm just glad she's there. And I need more female roles, people of color, like all kinds of diversity. I'm for it. If you want to give me a trans doctor, heck yeah, like I'll take it. Like I don't care. I just want to see these people in roles and I don't want them to have to prove themselves so hard because they're the first of whatever. They're just a person. And if she sucks, she sucks, you know? Bring me the next woman. Yep. Like, I'm good.
Exactly. And Jodie has already had like such an extensive career. Matt Smith was fairly new when he came on as the Doctor, but she's been in Broadchurch. She's been in so many acclaimed shows and movies already that like we know she's a great actor. So it's like she's not going to suck. It's going to be amazing. So you all just need to get on board, guys. In the article, Mandy Chu does write, "I personally love the idea of bringing Jodie on to take on the role of the 13th Doctor, but not just because she's a woman. Repeat. Not just because she's a woman, because of one thing and one thing only. She is a damn good actor." So do you think for the people who are skeptical about having a female doctor, do you think that the fans need to have more faith in the actor's cast to execute the role and the character in an engaging way, especially when it's women or people of color, or even just the writer, since we're getting a new showrunner for this season?
You know, I don't want to assume about like any group of person, any kind of fans or anything like that. But I think that there's always going to be people who are going to hate it no matter what. There's going to be people who are just going to be against it. And I think like, you know, you don't want to ostracize any part of your fandom, but at the same time, you can't just keep catering to them. Mm-hmm. The show has to go where it's going to go, just like society is going to go in the way it's going to go. And if you want to keep growing and keep getting new fans, then you're going to have to just go with the times. I don't want to assume, you know, anything about any kind of group of fans, but I just hope that people just follow suit and just enjoy the show for what it is, enjoy the writing for what it is, and don't keep saying, well, in the past we did this. Oh, in the past we did this. Well, in the past we also had slaves. So yeah. Like, we're just not going to hold on to that. Like,
the past you gotta is not perfect. On, yeah. On a lighter note, you even kind of mentioned it early on that, you know, the special effects were not great.
Terrible.
And clearly we've come a lot farther since then.
Whenever I introduce Doctor Who to somebody, I usually have them start with Christopher Eccleston. Or sometimes if they want to catch up faster, I let them start with Matt Smith. But I'm like, just hang on for the special effects. Like, just get past it. Like, you know, just pay attention to the storylines and eventually we'll get through to like some really great stuff.
I think for us with fans, I think part of it is we get obviously so attached and so invested in these characters and these storylines, which is great, which is what the goal and I think the hope of a showrunner and a show creator and the team is. But at the same time, I think sometimes we get so attached to things that we forget to have faith in the people creating and making the show, where it's like, oh, I don't know about this casting choice, or oh, I don't know about this storyline, and oh, they cast a woman just because they wanted a woman. But at the same time, it's like, no, we have to have faith that these are great writers, great actors, great production designers, etc., who are going to make this casting choice, even if it was motivated by wanting to include more diversity, that they're going to make it organic and great and still cohesive with the Doctor Who storyline. Because also an alien who can regenerate forms, like it's been this long and he hasn't regenerated as half the population.
I went into this show when it was already on Netflix. Mm-hmm. We found it on Netflix. I think Matt Smith was about to lose Amy and Rory when I jumped in. So when I watched it, I watched it blind with no context other than like a couple episodes I had kind of poked seeing my brother watch and things like that. I binge watched it from 9 until like the season before Amy and Rory left. Wow. So I had no context, no understanding. So I didn't sit there in between seasons trying to figure out what was going to happen, trying to like guess, you know, what the spoiler was. I didn't sit there thinking like, oh, who is River Song or anything? Like it just happened the next episode, you know? So I watched it with just pure falling in love. And I think I watched it the way the creators would hope somebody would watch it with just no expectations of anything. And I fell hard. So when we lost Amy and Rory as like companions and I had to wait the whole season for like, to find out who Clara was going to be and things like that, I already was like, well, this wouldn't make sense. This wouldn't make sense. And I was formulating all these theories, which I was absolutely wrong about. And I think that sometimes as fans, like we overthink it and we forget to just enjoy it.
Because we're in this very tumultuous year between Avengers Infinity War and Avengers 4. I just know all the theories about Loki is actually Bruce Banner and this is that. And part of that is fun and community engaging. I think sometimes we have to check it.
Back to the Star Wars franchise, there's not a lot of franchises that have been around as long as the Star Wars one or Doctor Who, for example, or Star Trek. So like when you're waiting as a fan, like Star Wars, for example, you waited as a fan 20 years before the prequels and then you're waiting another. So you've sat there, you've read all the like, you know, extended universe stuff, you've formulated all kinds of like your own theories and your own things. So when somebody comes in and just kind of blows whatever you thought was going to happen out of the water, I can understand the fans that don't like that. But at the same time, like, you just kind of have to let go and just enjoy it and like kind of like, okay, well, it didn't happen the way I thought. That doesn't mean this story isn't a good story. But I feel like some people just get really sucked into that. It didn't go the way I thought it was going to go to. So now I hate it.
I love that you brought up Star Wars and Star Trek, and this is the big three when it comes to sci-fi. And they've been around for so long. And I think that's what's great about these is that they are sci-fi. So they deal with the future. They deal with looking to the future, and they constantly reinvent themselves because they have to. You know, our technology is not what it was in the 60s, and they were already looking ahead. Star Trek basically designed cell phones for us. We're constantly changing. We have to evolve to keep up with the storylines already. But then I think it has to reflect our society at the same time as we're moving along.
And I think that's a great point to make because Chu also writes in her article, "I'm grateful sci-fi shows like Doctor Who think about the future, progress, and social change. Good science fiction should always do this. It should always open doors and pave a new path for others to follow. With no one to push boundaries, to correct the injustices, the bad parts of history would just get repeated over and over again." What could this mean for the future of Doctor Who or sci-fi in general? As our present becomes a more diverse and interconnected society, are we finally getting a pattern of likewise more diverse and mainstream science fiction like Doctor Who?
I think what it could mean, and I'm going to go back to Star Trek on this one. I saw a video with they're interviewing the actress who plays Uhura in the original sci-fi. And, you know, she's talking about how at one point, like, you know, early on in the seasons, she did not want to do Star Trek anymore. And she wanted to go on to do some Broadway stuff and some more serious things. And, you know, she was on this cheesy sci-fi show. And then she met the Reverend Martin Luther King. Mm. And he told her that it was one of the only shows that he allowed his children to watch because in the role, she wasn't playing like a stereotypical black woman. She was playing a woman who just happened to be black. And she was on equal level with the men on the show. And she was respected and this and that. And he said that was really important to him to see a person of color, a woman equal to everybody else. And she went back and she told Gene Roddenberry that happened. He goes, well, then you can't leave. We have more work to do. And I think that that is the importance of shows like Doctor Who and casting a female doctor and things like that. I don't know what'll happen in the future, obviously, but I hope it's that kind of importance and that kind of change that comes from having Jodie as the 13th doctor.
Right. You see shows like Star Trek that seem really cheesy. I think that also presents a really interesting point where just because you're doing important work in representation and diversity in media doesn't mean you still can't have a lot of fun while you're doing it.
Exactly.
Because Doctor Who is a lot of fun.
And I think these shows are important for me as like a mom because my son has grown up with Harry Potter always in his life. He's grown up with the Marvel Universe always in his life. I didn't have that growing up. I didn't have that childhood with like all the superhero stuff. I mean, I had the X-Men animated series and that was like kind of about it. We didn't have too much. And so my kids have always grown up on that and they've always seen women. Like my son loves Pepper Potts a lot. I mean, he loves Iron Man, but to him, Pepper Potts is most women to him. That's what he sees, because he sees this powerful woman who checks the, you know, arrogance out of her significant other. Or like, I have my little one, he's six. Yeah, he's six. And, you know, he plays the Disney Infinity like video games. He loves those. And one day I see him jumping off the couch and making all these moves. I'm like, what are you doing? And he's like, I'm Black Widow. Duh. Because she has the cool action moves. So they've always kind of seen like these powerful types of women. And, you know, now that they get to see a 13th Doctor, like it wasn't weird to them that the 13th Doctor would be a woman. It's just that's the life that they've grown up in. They've just kind of always seen these powerful women. And I love that because I'm a stay-at-home mom. And so I can't show them my power career or anything like that because my choice was to be with them and to be at home. I work from home, but still, like, they don't get to see that. But in their movies and what they love, in Star Trek and things, women are powerful and they're equal to men. And so they just don't see, like, a difference. To them, they know that Harry would never have survived without Hermione. They understand that. And I think that's really, really important when it comes to these things.
That's an amazing insight. And also being a stay-at-home mom is just as hard, if not harder, than having a power career.
It's my power career.
For me, it's important.
But for them to see not just women stay home kind of thing, it's nice for them on TV to see people like Pepper Potts, who started as like maybe an assistant, but now is CEO and, you know, in running charge of everything. And also to see, like, you know, the General and Wonder Woman and stuff like that. Like, I love that they get to see so much of women in different roles.
That's awesome.
It's a great range.
So now we're going to ask you questions of a different nature. You said you listened to the show, so I think you know what's coming.
I'm excited.
Would you rather?
Would you rather have the best cosplay at a convention, but you have to wear it every day of your life? Or would you rather have a damning wardrobe malfunction, but you can return to street clothes?
I think I'd have to be the same cosplay all the time. I don't want to have any kind of damning thing. I have two boys. They don't need to see their mother in any kind of damning situation. I don't want to traumatize my children. So I'd rather just wear the same thing all the time. And they'd be like, Mom is so weird.
But what would the cosplay be?
I don't relate to this character in any sense of the word, but I really, really love the Bellatrix outfit. Like, it's wild and crazy, and I don't think she's a great character other than like she's really mean and like evil, but I just love the getup and the hair and the wands.
Girl has a good look.
She's so extra. I love it.
So extra, and I think I could get away with just being that eccentric crazy lady walking down the street in that big Bellatrix outfit and just yelling at people, or like you could be totally nice and throw people off. So I'm gonna go with Bellatrix.
I'm into it. I need it now. So would you rather see Captain Kirk become a Jedi or see Luke Skywalker become captain of the Enterprise?
It's going to have to be Kirk as a Jedi. Uh-huh. I do not want Luke. I love Luke, but I don't want him on my Enterprise. Mainly because I loved Jean-Luc Picard so much, and he's everything to me. I just don't think Luke has that. But I think that Kirk would make a good Jedi. I think he could do it.
Awesome. Would you rather be best platonic friends with your OTP or date the one you desire most but be the reason they break up? And this could be a hypothetical situation where your husband may not be – before your husband, maybe.
Let's see. My OTP is Worf and Deanna Troi on Next Generation. And I know that's really weird. And some people hate that, but I loved it. I would never want to be the reason that they broke up because I love them so much. And I'm like, fight me on it. I don't care. I love Troi and Worf. And so I'd rather be best friends with them.
You can be on the Enterprise all the time.
That would be the best. I would live there with my family.
Would you rather be a henchwoman for Loki or Magneto?
Magneto. Loki's too crazy. He wouldn't care about me. But I know Magneto would risk his life for me.
Would you rather have an alternate universe where Harry Potter's a squib or an AU where he becomes a dark wizard?
Dark wizard, for sure. And I've heard on some of your other podcasts that that they chose the same way. And I have the same reason. Like, I think Harry has that like evil side. Like, he could have gone either way. And like, when you watch Harry Potter after figuring out like Snape was really like this big hero and was always on, like, you go back and you watch the first movies and you're like, those little shits, man. They were just mean to Snape. And they were just like judging him based on the way he looked, even though he didn't really do anything. And not that he made it easy for them either.
Right.
Harry always had that little bit of a Slytherin side to him anyways, so that makes more sense to me.
I love it.
So this was so fun. We're so happy that we were able to have you on the show.
I'm so glad to be here.
Oh my God, we're huge fans of you and all your awesome work.
I'm huge fans of you guys. Like, no, ever since you're first, ever since you guys put out that the geek girl rules and stuff.
10 rules of fangirling.
Oh, I love that. Aww. I was like showing everybody. I was like, this is so accurate. Like, you need to check the crazy. You need to like, there's so much of this that I'm like, I wish I would have had this going into the, you know, fandom world.
Cool. But you've made my lifetime.
We died when you posted that. We're like, oh my God, someone read this.
The thing that I really love about you guys is that the guests that you have on, they range from so many different things. And that's like a big deal. Like, I don't feel like you guys are like recording for like the likes or just hitting certain genres. I feel like you're really fangirling and I love that. Like,
thank you. Well, we are. Well done. And we're so honored and privileged to count you among our guests.
I'm so excited to be here.
Okay. So where can everyone check out all of your awesome endeavors and find you on the interwebs?
I am an oversharer. I, like, have no more Instagram pages than, like, a person should have. For the most thing, you find me on Instagram as This Dorky Nerd Girl. I also post all of my cosplay photos of other cosplayers, people that, like, I just see and fangirl over on Geek and Cosplay Report. I do contribute to Temple of Geek quite a bit. So my photos and my articles and things like that you can find at Temple of Geek, their website, their Facebook, their Instagram. And then also I do photography, like portraits and baby pictures and things like that. You can find me there at Paparazzi Mom. And then me and my bestie, we do a little YouTube channel that's really lame, but we love it, where we just kind of vlog about mom stuff and geek stuff. We're the Con Madres, which is a play on word. In Hispanic culture, there's a saying called comadre. We took the M out and put a con for like conventions. And so it's a Con Madres, and you can find me there as well.
And we're going to have all of these links to Monica's amazing profiles on our website, yourbiggestfangirl.com.
If you're enjoying these episodes, do not forget to rate, review, and subscribe.
And please follow us on social media at YBFG Podcast on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram, and yourbiggestfangirl.tumblr.com on Tumblr.
Yay, we'll see you all next time. Our theme song is The California Lullaby Instrumental by Josh Woodward, used under Creative Commons Attribution 4.0 International License.